I'll never forget this lesson. You walk into it, and especially as I did as a tech person, where I was like, oh, how hard could this be? The nuance, and it's a very human business.
This is the South Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of self-storage nationwide. With the help of his incredible team at SouthStorageInvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self Storage Podcast. I am your host, Scott Myers, and on today's episode, we have Jackson Stevens with Spare Box Storage, where he's going to be talking about some of the new innovations, not only in our industry, but what they have come out with as a result of being owners and operators of a fast-growing and scaling organization within our industry. So, Jackson, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Scott. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad we were able to continue our conversation. We thought it was fitting the last time we talked to have you on the show to talk a little bit more about what you've got going on, which is pretty much a tiger by the tail. And as we were discussing before we started recording here, that it was very well received at the Inside Self Storage trade show, which we were both at in Vegas. And so with that, let's start before we jump into your offerings and the tech. Give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you got into this incredible industry.
Yeah, so my background is as a technologist. It's a fun story, actually. So the co-founder, my partner, Matt Rundle, who's running Sparebox Technologies with me, we actually entered the space at around the same time. So there's a company called Red Dot Storage, and they had a new COO enter the scene, and they were trying to figure out a way to make their operation a lot more efficient. And they made the decision ultimately that they wanted to build their own property management system. Now, for anybody that's familiar with property management systems, might be laughing right now because it's an enormous, very large enterprise piece of software. It's very complicated, but you know, some new leadership at Red Dot Storage, and you know, the software agency that I was working with at the time said, let's go for it. You know, we didn't know the difference at the time. We said, how hard should this be? While building your own property management system actually ends up being quite the Herculean effort. It was a year and a half project. We ultimately delivered a successful property management system, but Matt and I were working very closely together. I on the software agency side, Matt on the Red Dot Storage side as the director of IT. So, you know, I became intimately familiar with self-storage operations. I actually learned how accounting reports out of property management systems like SiteLink work by reverse engineering them, which is not a way I would recommend anybody goes about learning that, but that's what we did at the time. So my approach to self-storage and my foray into it was really as a kind of a modern web technologist trying to find better ways to operate it. So we didn't have the curse of knowledge that some operators might have that have been in the space for a decade or two. And, you know, it's really fascinating how you kind of need both, it seems. And we're obviously going to talk more about that. But so that was my entrance into it. I actually ended up joining the Red Dot Storage team to oversee that product internally. We continued to enhance it, build some really cool features into it. Ultimately, a number of us ended up starting Sparebox Storage. So Matt was employee number one, I was employee number two. And we scaled that platform from zero properties to 108 properties in the course of 18 months. Yeah, it was a wild ride. But keep in mind, this was happening while COVID was going on. So, you know, the industry was a flurry and we were building this portfolio quite rapidly with all of our technology know-how and our operational efficiencies that we've developed. So, and now obviously we're on the Sparebox Technologies, but I've been in and around the industry for about 7 years.
Well, incredible growth, and I think you probably made a few folks uncomfortable, not intentionally, but as they look at their portfolio and perhaps how fast or maybe slow they're growing, that's quite an appetite and quite a way to scale up. And I would say, you know, as you touched on, you know, there's there's a number of software vendors out there in our industry, and many of those are built for the larger operators, and the ones that are more affordable and on the smaller scale for smaller facilities, that, you know, they lack the bells and whistles, if you will, but really the data points that somebody needs if you're growing and scaling a portfolio of small facilities. And so it's kind of the blending of two that the industry didn't offer and the market didn't offer at the time. And so as we all are clamoring to get as much data as possible to dial in and get better at our underwriting and creating a history and a database of information that we can lean on anytime we go into a new acquisition, you know, there wasn't anything in the marketplace until you came along. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, and it continues to develop, right? Data continues to be at the fingertips of acquisitions teams and operations teams to really know how to scale portfolios. And to your point, Scott, I mean, the Sparebox Storage story is fairly unique. There's not many platforms out there that grew that quickly, but we were fortunate enough to have very strong operators and great alignment with the investors behind all of it. So yeah, I hope nobody hears that and gets discouraged that they're not getting to 108 properties in 18 months, because that's, I don't know when we'll see that again, just the way the market's looking these days. But yeah, I mean, we will continue to see this golden age of data in supporting folks as they're looking to invest and grow their portfolios. That's right.
Well, as the old adage goes, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so that's why products and companies are founded and born and grown. So as you're growing and you're scaling, you're finding out it is a necessity to be able to, you know, if you can't find it and buy it off the shelf, that you have to create it on your own. And so on a necessity, you create it. As you said, nobody, I don't think too many people would, you know, take on, a massive undertaking like what you've done. And I, for one, wouldn't, because I'm really not that fond of the operations side of the business. I'd rather go find the deals and then let our operations folks handle the rest. But in that, yeah, there's a need to be able to have that data and to have, you know, if you're growing and scaling that big, you need to have your operations side dialed in. So let's talk about the components, perhaps the areas in which you felt deficient or where there wasn't something in the marketplace that you felt a need for, and then how you developed it and really, you know, the four food groups within your operating system that you developed as a result of that.
Yeah. So to give a lay of the land, I'm actually the opposite of you, Scott. I am an operator through and through. That's what I love doing. I love building great customer experience. I love making things work well, work more efficiently. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning, which is a lot of fun. So the cool thing about everything we're doing at Sparebox Technologies is it's actually sitting on top of incumbent property management systems, right? So currently we're integrated to the big ones, SiteLink, Storage, Self-Storage Manager, also known as SSM. So we built a suite of tools just to help ourselves operate a lot more efficiently, right? So we have Serum, which is a one-of-a-kind comprehensive remote management solution that puts the control of puts control in the hands of the operator. We have Rafa, which is an intuitive field operations app made for in-person and remote managers alike. So that's our field and remote management play. On the other hand, we have kind of a revenue management customer acquisitions play. So we have Profit, which is an AI-driven revenue management system based on current competitor rates and tenant behavior analysis, which is really cool. It actually factors in move-out probability if you're doing rate increases. And then we have Bigfoot, which we're really excited about, which is a spare foot optimization tool for operators using the aggregation platform Sparefoot for customer acquisitions. So all these things kind of combined drives what we saw at Sparebox Storage, some really phenomenal NOI growth and NOI margin.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do this if we could with the time that we have, Jackson. We can't do a deep dive into each and every one of those. But
No, of course not.
I think you've whet everybody's appetite, and there's a few areas in which people would like to learn a little bit more about. So instead of 30,000 feet or a mile deep, you know, let's give a cursory review of each one of those areas. And then we'll go from there.
You bet. We'll take it in turns. So actually, we'll do reverse order. How does that sound? That might be a little more interesting for folks. So Sparefoot, for those that aren't familiar with it, is the Kayak or the Expedia for self-storage, right? It's a means of having another place for a customer acquisition. You just as you might on a Kayak or Expedia, someone is searching for self-storage near them, it's going to give them a search engine results page or a SERP based upon their zip code or their city for great deals and self-storage opportunity, rental opportunities around them, right? So as an operator marketing your properties on that platform, as you scale, it becomes increasingly difficult to know how to bid and how to bid effectively. So the bid is effectively a finder's fee, right? The bid is what you're paying Sparefoot to say, yes, please put my facility on your platform. Every rental I get, I will pay you a month and a half rent, right? And potentially all the way up to 10, I'll do a 10x multiple on the month rent, depending upon how bad you want it. So it's a bit of a pay to play system. There's a roughly 30,000 facilities on the platform. So bids are constantly in this dynamic ecosystem. So we needed a tool to allow us to get really efficient in how we were setting our bids. So our data scientist actually created this little Python script that has now become Bigfoot that allows people to set their rates, set a max threshold for their comfort for any one of their facilities. And then the tool actually optimizes the bid within it. So it finds these little deltas to save them money. And then it also ensures that you're not competing against yourself if you have facilities in a certain proximity to one another. So that one's pretty exciting.
And so that's always been one of the biggest challenges, hasn't it? As operators, we're looking at filling up that last 5 to 10% or using Sparefoot maybe on the front end to be able to get some door swings on the front end. But you're just kind of beholden to them. And, you know, once you open that Pandora's box, you have no control. So, you know, to finally be able to have some of that control and decide and determine whether you take those clients or not, or whether it's not worth it, and you just kind of wait maybe a day, a week, or a month before you fill up at those rates. I mean, that's got to be music to operators' ears here.
Yeah, that's right. It's starting to put a little more control in their hands and take the mystery out of it. Yeah. So in the same canoe, if you will, of customer acquisition revenue management, so profit we're really excited about. So this is the revenue management system that we developed internally with some very smart data scientists, one of whom recently just joined us from Public Storage. So AI machine learning driven, it helps you set your street rates on a daily cadence or weekly or monthly, depending upon how frequently you like to do it. And then it also assists you in your ECRI or existing customer rate increase strategy. So it allows you to toggle your revenue goal and then actually at the same time, see what the move out probability is for the eligible pool that you're looking at, which is really neat, right? So we actually factor in roughly 19 factors from the tenant profile to give you a fairly accurate move out probability in terms of will they tolerate the rate increase or not, which is really exciting. So what I love about this tool is revenue management is really important for any operator of any size. There's a couple of incumbent tools out there that do great work. We actually evaluated them for our own platform a couple of years ago. And ultimately, we found it challenging to make the numbers pencil in terms of just getting on board and getting going. So we started building it internally. We love that we're starting to bring something that's really sophisticated, but is more affordable, more user-friendly for, you know, smaller operators, right? Because most of these property management systems, your site links and storage, do have baked in revenue management modules, but they're pretty blunt in how they work, right? You say, okay, my 10 by 10, once it gets below 80%, I want to trigger some cost cutting, right? So you have to go in and manually configure all of these things. So this system actually brings in much more powerful revenue management analysis at your fingertips. It makes the process actually kind of fun, right? We were happy with the way the interface turned out. Yeah, Canoe 2. So we were talking about revenue management, customer acquisition over here. Now we're talking about field management and remote management.
Yeah, so let's pull on the thread a little bit on the revenue management. So you and I were both in Vegas, and maybe I was just sensitive to this, and I know you certainly are. You know, rate management, revenue management, probably one of the hottest topics. And you know, for better or for worse, you know, the discussion is, or the questions are, how smart are the models getting, and are they just smart enough to cause problems in the marketplace where, you know, we have the AI learning and these modules, and they're going out and competing against each other, almost reminiscent of, you know, the, you know, days gone by when many of the mom and pops in the unsophisticated markets and operators, you know, there was the race to the bottom. You know, there's a few folks out there that are saying, well, you know, AI is getting really good at this, but not so good that they're not also out there doing the same. And now we have machines racing to the bottom. you know, I know we have the ability to step in and stop that and halt that and set some parameters, but, and we could have a very lengthy discussion and you know, if then scenarios, but, you know, what's your take on that and how is your software, you know, solving that or at least keeping, you know, the facilities that are under your purview from, you know, falling, you know, to that or succumbing to that and getting your rates and having your rates go a little lower than you would expect before you can grab a hold of it?
That's a great question, Scott. Yeah, I know the commercial real estate sector is reeling, especially on the multifamily side. There's some really interesting things going on for algorithmically set pricing. And I know there's some concerns in the self-storage space right now about that. Fortunately, we have guardrails that are built into profit that prevents things from spiraling out of control. Target occupancy, and then actually making sure that although competitor rates, while a large factor in how the algorithm works, not the only factor, right? It's taking into account your history. It's taking into account your own move-in velocity to ensure that it's just not going to be a race to the bottom, right? So that's something that we were very mindful of when we were constructing this, because we know that, you know, we don't want to enter that chapter again. And even though it seems that there's a little bit of that going on with the REITs at the moment.
All right, so let's move to Canoe 2.
You got it. So we were talking about revenue management, customer acquisitions over here. Now we're getting into operations. So field management and remote management. Remote management, obviously a super hot topic, as I'm sure you saw at ISS. There were at least 4 panels, I believe I saw, on the topic of remote management. But to begin this with, so, and I think a lot of people listening that perhaps do their own rent rolls will really resonate with what I'm about to say. So even in the red dot storage days, we discovered that we just needed something that communicated real time with the property management system. It's really that simple. So most traditionally, what you'll see people do is they will print off the rent roll from the property management system. They'll put it on their clipboard. They'll get their pen and they'll hit the ground, right? Unit 1, okay, customer lock, check. Unit 2, overlock, check. So what happens when you're done taking all those notes? You then have to go back to the office, log on to the property management system, and re-enter all those notes. Now, for someone who loves operational efficiency as much as he does, that drives me crazy. So we've built a tool, Rafa, that was optimized actually for tablet use, and allows the property manager to just fly through their rent roll and their tasks. So we built in a task module. It communicates with your property management system in real time. And there's some really neat advantages to this, right? You might see a unit that someone said they moved out of, and you say, great, they moved out, looks clean, let's go ahead and green tag this or whatever your nomenclature is, and you say it's available. So the unit right then and there is available once it's communicated to the property management system and once it's communicated to the website via the PMS. You're not waiting 4 hours perhaps to then get back to the office, back to the computer, to indicate to your PMS that, hey, that unit is in fact available. We have seen, our property managers at Sparebox have seen that units will get rented in that time. So someone might be looking around and they might say, oh, well, they don't have a 10x10, let me move on. So if you're able to turn over inventory more quickly, and this is something that's really, really important in other industries, but I think is quite important in self-storage, sometimes people don't realize it. I mean, once they're able to do that kind of inventory flip, like you're seeing more revenue right off the bat, which is really exciting. It also has the ability to take photos, send them directly to tenants. So we actually have a series of templates that people can create in the system. You can say, hey, Mr. Jones, please stop leaving your empty Coke can behind. So there's actually a trash template where you can take a photo and with, I think, 2 clicks, send that photo to the tenant, to their phone number and email sitting on their property management system with the photo saying, this very professional, well-branded message, please refrain from leaving your trash behind, right? So it's allowed our field team to operate on this whole other playing field that we see a lot of other field teams struggling with, quite frankly. So yeah, you can see my excitement about it because I've been out there and I've seen the excitement from the field team members that perhaps we're using a different system prior to using this and then having this put in their hands. Like it lessens their workload and allows them to cycle through facilities much, much faster, which is really key. So that's Rafa. That's the remote field app. Rafa actually plugs into Serum, which is the final product offering we're going to talk about. So CRM, this one-of-a-kind comprehensive remote management platform. This is when, well, let me put it this way. What we saw from our perch is remote management has a lot of mystery around it, right? You'll go and listen to some of these panels about how certain folks are approaching it and what the right staffing model is and which call center you should use. And to us, it seemed like there were really two ways you could approach it. You could go third-party management, which not everybody wants to do. Of course, some people do want the control in their hands. They want to own the operations. They want to be a little closer to it. They want to save on that fee. And then there's the do-it-yourself, and then you have to have the know-how and the savvy to plug all these things in, duct tape all the services together, which quite frankly is quite hard for owner and operators in the industry. You know, we were unique in that we had a lot of technological competency. That was just, you know, the impetus for Sparebox Storage coming out of Red Dot. So we said, you know, we've figured this out in a way that's worked beautifully for us. What if we were to create a package where someone could kind of have a turnkey solution to remote management, right? So there are components that you don't necessarily have to have, but we'll help you with the call center integration. We'll help you with the kiosk. We'll help you get a kiosk if that's something you want to do. But from our standpoint, the technology and technology and self-storage, generally speaking, it shouldn't just benefit new renters. And I think that's typically what you see when you go to SSA SpringShare or you go to ISS. Like, remote management in the technology competencies really focuses on new renters. How good is your rental center? How good is your kiosk when someone's trying to rent? But that's just the tip of the iceberg, of course. Like, you have active tenants you need to take care of. You have a complete operation responsible for stewarding, the facility, stewarding the asset, making sure customers are satisfied so that way when perhaps they do get hit with a rate increase, they're like, oh, well, they've actually been quite helpful and my experience has been really, really good. So I'm happy to bear it. So we're really excited about CRM as we're starting to roll that out to our first customers, because I think we're going to see a lot of advantage and a lot of benefit. You know, I know one of the metrics that folks in the industry love to tout is what their FTE per store is, right? Their field FTE per store. So the REITs are typically between 1.2, 1.4. You'll hear a lot of people celebrate that they're at around 0.8. Sparebox Storage today is actually at 0.3. And we do it marvelously. And a lot of that is attributed to just how smart we've gotten about process and procedure, how we've baked that into intuitive tools to allow our field team to do their best work and to ultimately yield a consistent customer experience.
Okay. So I want to go back and make one comment regarding Rafa, and that is, we've seen, as you mentioned, you're rolling all these into one platform, which, you know, everybody loves. Anytime you can consolidate, you don't have to have multiple apps and multiple tools and software. You know, that's always key. But why are you doing that? And does it make sense? Do you get the best of the best? And what we've seen with Rafa, you know, there are a couple of those standalones for field operators to be able to just operate a little more efficiently. But all those, from what we've seen, is mostly, it's almost like project management software that was kind of shoehorned into a self-storage model, and it didn't integrate with anything else. And I'll tell you, many of our listeners here and Storage Nation have heard me say this, that speed is more key to than any other facet in our organization right now, Jackson. We got KPIs, we're measuring everything, but right now everything just has to happen fast. Delays are the most, if you want to call that, label that as its own KPI, going slow and delays are more costly than anything else. And it just erodes any other progress if we get delayed for anything. So, the fact that, as you just mentioned, a shining example, and here's the ROI on something. It's great to have everything all in one place, but what's the ROI on it? Well, if that field manager, it takes 4 hours before everything's uploaded and you miss one or two rentals, then, was it really a great tool? Well, maybe not. So that is absolutely key. But then that leads me to the question, when we're looking at, you brought up a couple of points as we're looking at, full-time employees, that has been the age old. Here's where technology, here's where kiosks come into play. is we can reduce payroll because it is one of the highest line item expenses of operating a facility. And the smaller facility, the more difficult it is to get the ratios right. You know, you can't underwrite, you know, it, even at a bank standard of 5%, you know, management, if you've got a small facility, it doesn't pencil out. And then you are underserved if you try to manufacture to that number and keep somebody within those hours, you're not operating efficiently either. So the one of those questions then within that is, okay, well, I'm going to suffer then, it, meaning if I don't have an employee there who's negotiating with a client when they walk in the door or on the phone, if I'm not, if that, there's not an employee or a staff member behind the desk that is upselling to, you know, renter's insurance and locks, boxes, moving supplies, and anything else that I have, then I it's an either or. You know, I have to be happy with, you know, not having payroll, that expense, but I'm going to have a slower lease up, and I'm not going to have the, you know, the add-ons in terms of an average unit. What we're seeing with technology, however, is that gap is decreasing, and then we're able to deliver those services and that revenue less expensively with tech. So, I guess, am I on the right track? Maybe speak to that a little bit with the data that you're seeing with your models and just in the industry in general.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Scott, that's a great point. I mean, well, you think about it. To your example, it's like, well, we need someone there to upsell because we're missing out on revenue. I mean, most revenue management systems, ours included in websites, are now starting to build in upselling capabilities themselves, right? Like, this is nothing new. To self-storage, this is a little more novel, but when's the last time you went to an e-commerce website and when you were checking out, it's like, oh, get this one more thing for 50% off. Like, these are tried and true methods that have worked in many other industries that we're just now starting to see the application in self-storage, which I think is really exciting. And then as it relates to, it's like, well, if nobody's there, then I'm saving on that payroll expense. There's not necessarily, you know, and I want to be clear that the goal isn't to let's get payroll down to zero, right? That's not necessarily the goal, because depending upon your unique market, your community, the nature of your portfolio and how you want to manage, it might really behoove you to spend a little more on payroll. Just, it totally depends. We find in scale that efficiency is really key. So the larger you get, the more that you're going to want to lean on technology. But to your point, it can be a difficult needle to thread, but technology will find ways to continue to bridge this gap. As I was mentioning, e-commerce has been doing it for a long time, and there's all sorts of vendors that are really trying to yield a consistent experience even when someone's not on site, and that's only going to get better.
Well, this is a very low labor intensive area in terms of our industry, and it's a replicatable, you know, sales pitch, if you want to call it that, or an experience for the customer. And so I would just assume, and we're already starting to see this in terms of just the website experience alone, chatbots, as they continue to get smarter, and as we continue to, you know, integrate more AI and they get smarter and better and more, a more human-like experience, I would have to think that may be accelerating a little bit faster, where we are able to reduce some of those payroll hours because now we're able to deliver even more services in a more, you know, customer friendly in a more personal manner with AI.
And I think the right way to think about it too, Scott, is, I mean, roll up your sleeves and do the homework on why are people calling in, right? And I think for many operators, they'll find it's 80% of it is common reoccurring reasons, right? What's my gate code? When's my bill due? What's this charge? So there are some groups out in the industry that are building AI chatbots that are starting to handle those in a very well automated fashion. And I know there's some good customer success stories coming out of it as well, where they've been able to, you know, either reduce payroll as it relates to like a customer service team, call center, or they've just been able to better focus those people towards higher and better uses, which again, also kind of starts this positive flywheel effect. That's a big philosophy for us, right? And coming from tech, it was always the automate the boring stuff, right? Things that are the high frequency, simple use cases that, you know, a system could bat out a response to very easily. What's my gate code, right? Like with the right integration, that becomes pretty simple to do. All of a sudden, you just reduced call volume by 20%, right? That's significant once you're looking at these numbers on a month-over-month basis.
Well, from just one of the stats that you shared earlier, Jackson, of getting your full-time employees down from 1.8 to 0.3, I know there's a whole lot of owner-operators right now that have been doing the math, and they may not have heard what we said the last 10 minutes. And so and they're going to be looking you up to discuss it. And as you said, it's, you know, this is nuanced, and it is portfolio-specific, and I would say it's even facility-specific as well. But let's talk about the folks that are looking to get into the business that don't have their first facility yet, or they do have their first. And so they haven't scaled yet. They haven't grown. They don't know what they don't know. And they haven't got into some habits that may be difficult to then, you know, come back and implement a more efficient tech heavy, you know, approach to management. So for the new investor that is looking to get into self-storage or may have one or two, you know, how do they get into this mindset and maybe overcome the fear, or, you know, give them an approach right out of the gate to, you know, so that they don't go down the path of having to reverse engineer something when they've recognized that they should have implemented something like this, whether it's all four or even one of the, you know, the pieces of tech that you mentioned right now before it's too late?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question, isn't it? Yeah, I love this one, because we actually had, when we were at ISS together, Scott, we had a number of people stop by our booth, and it obviously says Sparebox Technologies. So for newcomers to the industry, they're like, great, I need technology. And it's like, well, obviously, technology means a lot of things. So the first thing I point people to is, what property management system are you going to use? To me, that's table stakes. And I think to a lot of other operators in the space, they would call that table stakes. There are people that I believe are being successful with using QuickBooks and kind of managing units in a more traditional accounting system. But it all starts with that, I would say. So this is very 101 kind of stuff. I think that's extremely important. If you're going to have gate access, automated gate access, and having a good vendor, I think will be really key. That'll allow you to, you know, increase the rates of your units. You have greater security. Again, this is something that in most places we're seeing customers just kind of expect. Some form of access control, right? Now, access control can get very cutting edge if we start talking about things like digitized locks. You know, that's very interesting. And I think that's probably where the industry is going to go long term. But I know right now there's still some technological challenges on that front. But I mean, this is the beauty of this industry. It's all about doing kind of the basics really well. So if you start there and then you start to say to yourself, okay, well, am I thinking more of a traditional management approach where I do have someone behind the desk that's assisting both on customer service, leasing, collections, field, they're kind of doing it all, or do I want to go to more of a hybrid, right? That's in between this remote management play that we've been talking about. Hub and spoke is another popular thing. I think trying to get very thoughtful on your operating model will serve you really well, because again, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm not going to sit here and say you need to do remote management. Because at this point, maybe you don't need to, depending upon what your financial goals are and how you've underwritten the property and what you're really trying to accomplish with this first investment that you have. You know, there certainly does need to be a little more of a sophistication in how you approach the operations mindset. But that's where, you know, quite honestly, the CRM platform comes in handy. And that's really how we've thought about it, to help people, as opposed to interfacing with 3 or 4 or 5 different vendors to try to put all these pieces together, such in a way that they like the way it looks on an Excel spreadsheet, they can come and talk to one. So I think that's a great way to think about it. So not to step into your shoes too much, because I'm sure you're giving this advice all the time, but from my standpoint as someone who really lives and breathes operations and tech, you know, it's a matter of what your goals are, both for you personally, obviously the investment, what you're trying to make pencil. And then from there, just what you are most comfortable with once you've kind of checked those boxes in terms of, okay, we're going to go traditional, we're going to go hybrid or hub and spoke, we're going to go remote. There's a lot of different ways to solve it. But I think to your point, Scott, being very thoughtful upfront about that will set you up for long-term success. Because then you can just start to build on the lessons that you've learned, as opposed to, okay, well, now let's just throw it into reverse and do something totally different because I'm not liking the results I'm getting.
Well, and I like the way you phrase this, Jackson, and it is true. This is a business where you just master the basics. And fortunately, it's not a difficult business model in order to do so. Now, there are lots of nuances and there's many directions that you can go. But that, you know, to add on to my own point, then it becomes a math problem or a math equation. So, you know, if you determine from the front end and you feel confident this is the direction we're going to head with this facility and, you know, our business plan and our portfolio moving forward, well, then it is a math exercise. And when you go back to the spreadsheet and back to your underwriting and your projections, as you also mentioned, what's the end goal? You know, what is our exit strategy? What does this need to look like? Then come, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. And now you need to begin to put in the numbers with regards to, you know, how much is this going to cost us in terms of a CapEx, you know, to implement this technology upfront and ongoing? And then what do we expect in terms of, you know, lease up and percentages and trajectories based upon that versus, you know, having people in place or the way that maybe we were thinking before we met Jackson Stevens with a spare box. So it becomes... it is, again, a simple, predictable business model, but I'm finding that, you know, those that are going to continue to win in the future are those that are sharpening their pencil, if you will, or that are just mastering underwriting. And there's more demands from our consultants on the feasibility study end to give them good data, to our lenders, to our private equity partners that are, you know, they're going to hold us to these numbers. And so, you know, we're finding ourselves having to, you know, dig a little bit deeper and really get skilled in this area. And yet again, you know, figuring out the plan to begin with, you know, having the data and the history behind it, and then implementing, you know, a plan and replicating that throughout our portfolio. Those are the folks who are going to win in this game in the future, in my opinion.
100%, Scott. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll never forget this lesson. You walk into it, and especially as I did as a tech person, where I was like, oh, how hard could this be? The nuance. And it's a very human business, right? Ultimately, you're dealing with folks who are leasing space from you. And that is very human. And humans behave in unexpected ways. So from an operational standpoint, it might shock you. And I'm sure you've had conversations about, okay, well, now we're doing auctions. Now what, right? There can be some surprises in terms of the things you'll come across in this business, but that also makes it really exciting. And there's a lot of room to get creative, which I think is great.
All right, Jackson, I appreciate so much our time together. And as we wind down, I got a question to ask you at the end here, but before we do so, what is the best way for people to be able to get in contact with you and learn a little bit more about your offerings?
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure, Scott. People can easily find us at spareboxtech.com. You can book a demo with us up in the upper right-hand corner. There's a big button that says book a demo. We would love to show you what we're working on. And if you are someone who's newer to the space, happy to just give you some consultation as to if you're thinking about a property management system or more foundational technology. I mean, we've been doing this for a while, so we're happy to help you out on that front. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm semi-active. And then our LinkedIn page is also pretty active as well. So we're constantly posting updates there. You know, this technology will continue to evolve over time as we get more folks using it. We're really excited to open this new chapter for tech-enabled value in the space. Yeah, bringing things that are, you know, easier to integrate with, and, you know, you feeling like you have a real partner. Like that's really what we're trying to do.
Well, Jackson, what I'd like to do is have you back for round two, if you will. And I would like to focus in on some case studies. So I wanted to ask you about some of those folks that you've worked with that have implemented, you know, all four pieces of technology or independently, and what that looks like to be able to implement and walk that through. Because I think that's from what we've been talking about today, that may be a little difficult for people to wrap their head around without those case studies. So I'd like to do that. But before we go, if you would, what advice would you have for folks that are looking to grow and scale? Those folks that are already in the business, they maybe have one or a handful of properties. You know, speaking from somebody who grew a portfolio at a very accelerated rate compared to most, what would you say were, you know, maybe some of the pitfalls to avoid or the secret to being able to keep a handle on all of that?
Yeah, you bet. Well, without getting over my ski tips here a little bit, because I'm not an acquisitions person, but the location of your facilities is going to be key, right? So that's actually one of the ways that we were able to drive operational efficiency, as we were clustering facilities, right? So If you have facilities that are many, many miles apart, that becomes less optimal in terms of how you're managing the operations of them. So that's a big one. But other than that, as we kind of spoke to earlier, I think having a good thesis around how you want your technology to support your scale, and then making sure that you're having honest conversations, keeping your vendors honest with you as you continue to scale, and keeping true to that vision, I think that'll really service you as you start hopping horses midway through the race. You'll be introducing, I think, some pain points that otherwise you wouldn't necessarily need.
Mm-hmm. And I would echo that 100%, because I've seen the challenges that have come from that, from so many operators, and I've fallen prey to that a couple times, and we've been going through some hefty growth patterns as well. So 100% agree. Very, very good advice. Well, Jackson, I am going to make sure that we have session two scheduled very, very soon to go through some case studies, and look forward to our next chat. Thanks so much for your time again, my friend.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this as well, Scott. Thanks for your time.
Hey, gang. Wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the Soft Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.